At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome into episode number 88. This week we got to talk with Rip Dickerson, who you may not have heard of, but your favorite outdoor personalities probably have. He's been in the industry for a long time, around 20 years now, working for different companies, Primos, Pradco, Faradine. You might recognize the name Nightingale, who he worked for as well. And he's now with Woodhaven. He's making all kinds of stuff when it comes to the outdoors products, cameras, calls, anything you can think of. He's been on some pretty big projects that you'll recognize. And we get into some of that stuff in this episode, kind of where he came from, how he got to where he is now, and a lot of other good stuff in there as well. So I think you guys are going to enjoy it. But first, don't forget about our sponsor for the episode, Rodney Hawkins. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney's the guy to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and now he's putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a specialist, land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Now, Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They sold over $85 million worth of ground in 2022 alone. They've got agents like Rodney all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them or anything that might be available on the market, or just to get an idea of what you're looking for, contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got a company called RG Outdoors, and he's currently carrying products from Radix Blinds, an all-natural scent elimination product called Camo Dust. He's got burner self-defense weapons, and he's got Tacticam trail cameras. He's adding stuff all the time as well. So you want to keep up with what he's doing there, or if you're interested in anything they have to offer, you can message him directly through his Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email him at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or just call him on his cell phone at 618-925-3153. You can check out our social media too. It's Ridge Hunter Outdoors. Instagram and Facebook are the two we use the most. We also have a Facebook group for the listeners of the podcast. It's called RHO Podcast Patrons. We kind of post a little bit of exclusive stuff on there, kind of keep you guys in the loop on the podcast, when stuff's coming out, the guests we're going to have on, when I know enough ahead of time to let you guys know that stuff. That way, if you have questions for them, you can ask them on there, and we can ask them on the podcast. So that's RHO Podcast Patrons. That's the Facebook group. We'll also be doing some giveaways on there later this year as we get into the fall. RidgeHunterOutdoors.com is our website. If you see anything on there you like, use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space, and you get 10% off of that. If you're listening on Apple Podcast or Spotify, make sure you follow us on there. Leave us a review. We really appreciate that. And then YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're going to have some more videos coming out soon. We've had a few now from the cabin, from Jeff's property. There was one from Nate's property recently, and we're going to have some more from him coming up soon. So make sure you subscribe so you can stay tuned for all of that. That pretty much covers the business side. So like I said, we're talking to Rip Dickerson this week. It was a really good conversation. I think you guys are going to enjoy it too. So let's get into it. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, guys, we got Rip Dickerson in here this week. Rip, how's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you doing, man?
All right. We're looking forward to talking to you about some calls and stuff and getting some little bit of hunting stuff and maybe some turkeys even and whatever you want to talk about. But first, I know we talked about this a little bit. Where did you get your start, like, hunting? Was it your old man? Was it your grandpa? Was it someone else, a friend? Where'd you get started in the outdoors? We kind of like to go over that with everybody we have on for the first time.
Okay. Yeah, I got started, you know, my dad. I'm like a whole lot of other people. You know, we quail hunted, coon hunted, squirrel hunted, rabbit, deer, you know, didn't turkey hunt. You know, I'm a little bit older. I'll be 50 this year, as a matter of fact.
Oh, and that's not old. That's not old.
Well, if you ask Alex DeBoer, that's old.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was on there with them, with those guys a while back. He was making fun of me for being old, and I still hadn't forgot it.
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, no, I'm still kind of upset about it. But you know, just hunting, you know, everything, man. We was, you know, whatever was in season and stuff. And, you know, I kind of grew up in a time when, you know, your parents could, you know, you 10, 11, 12 years old, you could walk out the door with a 22 and go shoot stuff in the woods, you know, and your parents not, you know, wind up in prison over it. So,
right. Definitely a different time.
Right. And that's just kind of where I got my start. And of course, you know, I got into high school and got into sports and stuff and didn't hunt as much. And, you know, then got out of high school and got back into hunting and been doing it ever since, man.
Yeah. So what kind of, like after you got out of high school and got back into it, what's kind of your number one target? You mostly deer hunting, you mostly turkey hunting, or just kind of equal on both?
I'm kind of equal on both. I'm going to try to hunt turkeys every day they're in season, and I'm still mad enough at them that I've got to go.
Yeah, that seems to be kind of a southern thing, ain't it?
It is. It absolutely is. And of course, you know, when you're like me and you're from Alabama, you know, there's a lot of people down here that it don't necessarily have to be in season. You know.
Yep.
You know, season dates, you know, they're down here are more of a suggestion,
right?
You know, than they are the rule.
Yeah, not so much a guideline.
Yeah, not a hard, you know, firm date. Yeah.
Right.
You know, if you're close, you know.
Yeah. If you're within a few months, you know.
you would be surprised at the people that are, you know, that are under 16 years of age and are, you know, handicapped in some capacity, you know, when that youth hunt and that handicap hunt rolls around, man, they come out of the woodwork, you know.
Yeah.
He looks 45.
But he's 16 for that weekend.
He's saying he's 15 and he doesn't have a license.
Yeah, right. I thought you were going to say those people down there learn how to use a spotlight and drive before they get their license.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah.
That's a given. You probably don't know this, but we had a city cop a few years ago shoot a deer on federal, which TVA land, TVA, inside the city limits in the middle of the day, you know, lunch hour, parked his car, his cop car, his patrol car, got out and shot this thing on the side of a 4-lane road.
Well, was it a big one?
In city limit. Yeah, it was a good one. Oh, it was a good one.
Had to be a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not questioning if it was worth it. I'm just
have a little tact, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a little something, and you know, I mean,
right?
It's like I said, it's 4-lane road, and there's businesses. Like literally, I mean, there's a row of businesses on the other side of the road.
I bet no one batted an eye, did they?
Well,
except maybe the
I
game
know.
Warden.
Somebody found out he did it. He got a lot of trouble over there.
I bet he did. Yeah, well, I was going to say we have our fair share of poaching, but I've definitely never heard of a cop shooting one in the middle of the day into limits, you know.
You know, and I was going to get into that too. You know, I hunt in Illinois some, and you know, I noticed that the shotguns up there during deer season, they sound a whole lot different than the shotguns down here.
Yeah, they have a little different tone than the squirrel gun.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a rifle sometimes.
Pretty close, occasionally,
you know,
don't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know what a .30-06 sounds like, and I could swear. And I've been trying to get somebody up there to tell me, you know, what kind of work are you having done on that shotgun?
It's the acoustics in the hardwoods that you don't necessarily have down there. I'm guessing.
That's what it is. Yeah, you know, we've got all these pine trees.
Yes, it's different acoustics now. Yeah.
Now I'm with you.
The pine needles just soften the sound down there. You're hearing what it really sounds like up here.
That's what it is.
I may have told this story on here before, but we heard from a guy that works in a certain capacity of law enforcement that was out during shotgun season several years ago, and he pulled up on this old boy who had, he had his 12 gauge, but then he also had his 300 Win Mag with him. And he pulled up and he asked him, he said, "What's that rifle for?" And he pointed over there at the fence line, you know, 300, 400 yards away. He said, "You see that tree line over there?" He said, "Yep." He said, "Well, I can't reach it with the 12 gauge."
Oh, no.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to hide it.
Oh, my God.
I'm pretty sure he got a hefty fine for that one.
Well, so I'll tell you something. So when I'm not sure that you can legally hunt in the state of Illinois, anybody,
right,
with all the rules and regulations you've got. I feel quite certain there that at any given time you're violating some law.
There's a good chance.
There's a good chance. So when I just about every time I get ready to come up there for whether it's turkey or deer, I call. Mm-hmm. I'll call and I'll say, "Hey, you know, I'm coming up," because, you know, and working in the hunting industry and stuff, you know, they tend to frown on it when you start getting a license for, yeah, you know, tickets for doing, you know, the wrong things.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want that to happen. I kind of like my job.
Right.
So anyway, I'll call and I'll talk to these people and I'll, you know, like, you know, "Hey, it's, you know, I'm just not sure, you know, what I can do and what I can't do. Will you help me?"
Mm-hmm.
And of course they always do. But one of the places I was hunting in Hardin, this was in Hardin County, right on the backside of the Shawnee Forest.
Mm-hmm.
There was, oh my gosh, man, I don't know if I've been many places in the country that was eat up with coyotes like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to me, there's not a whole lot better than just shooting a coyote right in the face.
You know? Yeah.
And I can't stand them. I will ruin a good deer hunt.
Oh, absolutely.
To kill a coyote.
Absolutely.
And I said, what can I legally do? "Oh, well, you know, daytime, you know, you can shoot them whatever you want to."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "During deer season? Oh, yeah, year round. You know, you can shoot them with a rifle, whatever." Mm-hmm. And I said, so you're telling me that I can sit in the woods with a rifle during deer season and shoot a coyote? "Yes, sir." I was like, "Okay."
Uh-huh.
I hope some of these people down south don't start realizing this, because you're going to have a problem.
You're going to have a lot of coyote hunters, ain't we?
Yeah, you're going to have a lot less deer next year than you have this year.
Yep. I'm the same way. If I see a coyote, whatever I'm hunting, it turns into a coyote hunt. Just as soon as I see them.
Absolutely, man. I've done it many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. They don't care what you shoot them with up here, whether AR, 50 cal, tank, you know. I mean,
dynamite them. I mean, it was whatever.
Yep. You just have at the coyotes. We do have a bunch of them, so I'm assuming that's why. But
you do.
Yeah, you're talking about it being hard to hunt and not break a law at any given point. It's hard enough just to live in Illinois without breaking any law. So the hunting, that just kind of goes without saying.
Yes, it does. And I mean, it does.
They change stuff every year, too. That's what, you know, that's why, like you said, you call every year. That's probably not a bad thing to do, especially being...
Oh, I do. They know me on a first-name basis.
Mm-hmm. Especially from being out of state, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Not that any of us local or in-state guys would catch any breaks, but out-of-state guys definitely ain't catching any breaks.
No, man, no. And I heard that for years before I ever got a chance to come hunt Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, man, you better not mess up there now. The game wardens up there are on a whole other level.
Yeah, there. I would agree with that. So before we get too far ahead of ourselves, though, I want to talk about kind of how you got into what you're doing now with the calls and all that, working for Woodhaven. So take us back to, how did you get your start in that, in the hunting industry?
Okay. I had, this was back in the early 2000s. I had, I was trying to remember the exact year, but anyway, I saw online, I was on the internet, and, you know, I mean, now then, of course, this wasn't the, you know, the dial up AOL internet. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a little newer than that.
Yeah. It wasn't making noises at you.
Right. But, yeah. anyway, I run across an opening at Primos, and growing up, you know, I was a Nightin Hill and a Primos fan, and you know they were the two major players, you know, back mm-hmm. then.
They were making a lot of videos back then on the VHS tapes and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I had to have every one of them.
I'm a little older than you, so I understand where you're coming from, brother.
Yeah, and I had them too. I had every one of them. Yeah. We literally, I mean, I every time they come, new one come out, didn't matter what it was,
mm-hmm.
I had to have it. Mm-hmm. And but I saw a job opening for a design engineer, and I had been taking some CAD classes and stuff here at a community college here, and mm-hmm. always loved to draw and stuff. And my dad had AutoCAD on a computer, and I taught myself how to use AutoCAD. And that just kind of evolved into this 3D modeling software that I use. And I've been using it since 2001. But anyway, that was SolidWorks, which is what I use, was one of the requirements for the job. So I called, and, you know, and that was, like I've said before, that was at a time when you could get an actual person on the yeah. phone.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. Try doing that now. Try calling Primos nowadays, or maybe not yes. them specifically, but any big company.
Well, just about any of those, you know, that are corporate structured, it's going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Especially to get somebody, you know, that's not a customer service.
Right, right.
You can get them if you hold long enough.
Right. Yeah, if you got half a day to wait for them.
But you're not getting a human resources manager. And that's, I talked to a lady named Suzanne Hardy, and she was like, hey, this job come down already. I'm fixing to turn the resumes that I've got into Will. You know, mm-hmm. He comes back from lunch in 30 minutes. And I said, okay. And she said, if you can get me something before I walk in his office, I'll be glad to put it in the stack.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally, I'm not kidding you guys, I typed up a 4-paragraph letter in Notepad.
Yeah.
Just my history, who I was, my family, and, you know, just a little bit about my education mm-hmm. and hunting, and I sent it. And, you know, I thought, man, this, you know, that one passed me by. Maybe, you know, maybe I'll catch another break. Right,
maybe next time.
Yeah. Well, about a month later, my phone rings and I answer it. And it was a Mississippi number, so I thought, well, heck, that might be them. You know, so mm-hmm. I answer it. And guy says, hey, he's just Rip Dickerson. I said, he is. He says, hey, this is Jimmy Primos. And I said, yeah, right, okay.
yeah, sure, yeah.
And hung up. I hung up on him. And that's the truth. So I hung up on him.
And, yeah, that's a classic, man.
Yeah. And it was because I thought it was one of my buddies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
So
why wouldn't it
being
be?
Being a smart ass. So, yeah, you know,
I understand.
As any good friend would be.
Yeah. But then I realized my wife didn't even know I'd applied for that job.
Right.
I was like, I didn't tell anybody. Oh, crap. So I called the number back. He didn't answer. I called, you know, two or three times, and nobody answered. So the next day I called, and I said, Suzanne, this is Rip Dickerson. And I said, you let me turn in the late resume. And I said, Jimmy called, and I accidentally hung up on him. Yeah. And, I was scared to death because uh-huh. I was like, golly, I hope I haven't, you know.
Hey, that's in the day, too, where it wasn't easy to accidentally hang up on somebody either.
Right. Yeah. And absolutely. So finally, he called me back like 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, man, I'm so sorry. I just apologize. So anyway, we talked, and he said, I'm interested. You know, we would like for you to come down mm-hmm. and interview in person. So I said, I can be there tomorrow, you know, and he's like, well, you know, that's not going to work. But anyway, so the next week, me and my wife drove down, and it at that time, Primos was based in Flora, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
the headquarters, and they had a facility in Brookhaven, Mississippi called the CNC facility. Okay, so that CNC facility in Brookhaven is in out in the county, and like mm-hmm. there's nothing around. You know, it's pine trees and pastures,
right?
You know, and chicken houses, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're following, you know, MapQuest, or I can't remember what it was we were using then, but we had the little dash mounted deal, you know.
Oh yeah.
We're following it, and so we turn on this driveway, and I was like, where is this thing taking us? And we pull up, and there's this metal building, and there's nothing special about it. It's just a big metal building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told her, I said, I think we're lost. She said, well, I don't know, you know, go ask them and see if we're at the right place or not, you know, if we drive off. So I did. I walked in, and it was like walking into a different world. I mean, it was just immaculate, you know, just everything was first rate. And we, you know, I interviewed, we went and ate lunch, come back, talked, you know, spent the whole day there. And at the end of the day, they offered me the job. And I took it on the spot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm in.
Right.
I mean, I'll be here in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And I've been doing it ever since. I spent a couple years out of the industry, 2014, I think, 15. But for the most part, I've been doing it ever since, man.
What was kind of your career path from Primos?
So I spent several years there, and left and went to Pradco, who at that time, Pradco owned, well, wait a minute, let me back up. I left there and I went to a place in Tishomingo, Mississippi that builds dump truck trailers and dump truck bodies and stuff. And mm-hmm. I went to work there designing and developing dump bodies.
Well, that's close to...
That's a pretty good segue from a grunt call to...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it just, you know, it kind of ties right in with the rest of my career. Sure.
Yep.
And, what it was is it, you know, it was a good offer financially. And,
right.
You know, it was back close to home. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I went, but, man, you know, I just missed it. And you know, wanted to get back into the industry. And me and my wife were going to, I think, the grocery store one day, and this guy calls and said he's a a headhunter, some type of headhunter position for Vista Outdoors. Mm-hmm. And
did you hang up on him too?
No, I didn't hang up on him.
I just checked.
But anyway, I wound up back at Primos.
Okay.
And I stayed there about 6 months. And this position at Pradco was, you know, it come open, and I talked to them about it. And so I took this position with Pradco and stayed there to 18, I think, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And I had wanted to, I knew this about the Woodhaven. And so kind of a little side story here. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the corporate world. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, I'm not that corporate structure stuff. And, you know, and that's kind of why, you know, I left Primos was the, you know, some of the aspects of the corporate world is just not
made for you, or you're not made for it.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not made for it.
Yep.
I mean, it works for them. You know, you can't deny that, but
no doubt,
it's not for me. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it was, you know, nothing personal or anything like that with anybody there.
Right.
You know, no kind of deal like that. It's, a great bunch of people. Like when I see Jimmy, you know, a couple times a year at these shows and everything, I always talk to him and spend time with him. And,
mm-hmm.
you you know, I make it a point to tell him, you know, I thank him for the opportunity, because I wouldn't be, probably wouldn't be here today talking to you guys.
Right.
If he hadn't took a chance on me that I didn't deserve,
right,
you know, or wasn't qualified for. And
yeah, especially after you hung up on him.
Yeah, after I hung up on him. I talked to Troy Ruiz about once a week, and Anthony Foster, who run the Brookhaven facility, I still talk to him quite a bit. You know, mm-hmm. Just great bunch of people, you know, good people. It's just that corporate thing. It was kind of the same deal with Pradco, you know. Mm-hmm. For Pradco, it was a chance to go work with Nightingale and with Harold, you know, Harold and David.
Right.
And, you know, I think the world of Harold. I spend a lot of time with Harold. That's where I do the majority of my deer hunting, is with Harold, at Harold's house,
yeah,
at his place.
He probably doesn't have many big deer, does he?
No, he doesn't have too many.
Yeah, I didn't figure.
He doesn't have too many. Now, I'll tell you something, and if they are big, he's going to kill them.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, and I don't blame
him. No, I'd be the same way.
So you know, I when we're running cameras, I try to not, if I see a good one, I just pass right on by and don't show it to him anymore.
Right, yeah.
It didn't take me but one time to learn that lesson.
Yeah, just a 2-year-old, you know, nothing to see here.
Yeah. Keep moving. Harold, you're not going to believe this, Harold. That camera didn't take a single picture.
Yeah. Oh, there's something wrong with it. There just ain't no deer out there.
Yeah, no, I just don't think there's nothing there. Let's try it again another week. Give it another week.
I'll go sit out there and see.
That's right. Harold, you stay away from my stand.
The only bad part about it is he's out and about every day doing something around there. Like he can't sit still.
Right.
So he sees them. You know, mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to hide.
He knows what's there, yeah.
Right. But so that I knew there might be an opportunity for me at Woodhaven, mm-hmm. And I had a no compete with Pradco, so for a 1-year no compete, mm-hmm. And I wanted to honor that, you know, and respect that, because they were good to me. Pradco was good to me, and I just don't really have no complaints. I just, like I said, I'm that mom and pop type person, the Nightingale days when Harold and David owned it, the Primos days when Will owned it, you know, stuff like that. That's where I'm best at. Yep. And, so I went to Faradine. I had a friend that worked at Faradine and knew they were looking for a project manager. So I went to work for Faradine for a year. Mm-hmm. And got a chance to work, you know, on the archery side of things, which I love archery, and nothing against gun hunting. I just, you know, I respect people that kill them with guns, mm-hmm. you know, just as much as anything else. I just love shooting a bow.
Yep, I'm the same way.
And so after a year, you know, then after that year, I went to work for Woodhaven, and been there ever since. Been there almost 5 years now, I guess.
Yeah.
4 or 5.
Throughout all this time and working with all these people, what's your main focus as a product designer?
I honestly don't have a main focus.
So you're just kind of the everything guy.
Yes. Yeah. You know, we literally did a little bit of everything at Primos, at Pradco. I worked with Summit, Code Blue, Moultrie, mm-hmm. Did some design work on some cameras and feeders. Mm-hmm. Same thing at Faradine, working on releases, broadheads. I got to be a part of the Axe crossbow while I was there, and that was great. I mean, just to see that thing come together, was a lot of fun. You know, it was interesting because they, you know, was working with stuff that I'd never seen before, mm-hmm. and never been part of. And, you know, that whole group that put that thing together, there's some really sharp guys in there.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff they did with that thing is amazing.
Yeah. For those of you listening that don't know, Faradine, if you have something hunting, archery-related, there's a good chance Faradine made it. At least half the stuff out there seems like they, they're the parent company of, you know.
Right.
So when you're talking about, like, having stuff to do with these feeders and the cameras and the releases, what kind of, like, what's kind of the nitty-gritty of it? What kind of stuff are you doing?
I take it from an idea and create, you know, create a finished product, you know, basically from start to the shelf, you know, from a notepad or a napkin or in your mind to on the shelf for sale.
Yeah.
I source, you know, manufacturing, packaging, you know, the works.
That's the kind of thing you got to take pride in doing, sounds like, if you're going to do a good job at it.
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell you, man, I've been fortunate to be a part of some really good teams of people. You know, it's made me better, and it's helped me grow, and it's helped me learn and understand. And, you know, it's created some really good products. You know, I was a part of the original trigger stick and the Gen 3 trigger stick.
Yeah.
You know, and that, to see what the trigger stick did and, you know, in the hunting industry, and to see the concept that the guy that, you know, the guy that originally come up with it, to see, you know, the concept he built in his carport. And then the finished product, you know, that was really the first time that I had been a part of that process.
Right.
And it's amazing, you know, this thing he had that he showed Will was like, you know, about 95 pounds, you know, and there's no way you're toting that thing anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm joking. It wasn't that heavy, but it was bulky and it was loud.
Enough that you didn't want to carry it around.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Will had the sight, vision, whatever you want to call it, to see the potential. And they were right. That thing, you know, there may not be another accessory to ever outsell the trigger stick.
No kidding.
Or outlive it. That thing, I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Yeah. You definitely see them all over the place.
Right. So, you know, you had that, at Pradco, I got to be a part of the Moultrie cameras and do some design work on some cameras. And that was good. Working with Darren Durham and Brian Malone and those guys, and, you know, and just getting a feel and an idea of what goes into actual putting a camera on the shelf to sell.
Right.
You know, and then, of course, like I said, at Faradine, it was mainly broadheads and releases and sights. But they were, when I started, they were, I don't know, about a year into the axe crossbow. And they finished it after I left, and I got a couple of them, and man, that thing. Have you guys ever shot one?
I've not.
I've seen them. I've not shot one.
Listen, I will tell you, you can ask anybody that knows me, anybody that's hunting with me. I have always said the day I have to shoot a crossbow is the day I quit, you know, quit hunting.
Right.
I'll hang it up.
Right.
And, but that's not the case anymore.
Changed your mind, huh?
Yeah. And it's, you can't shoot a dot, the same dot at 80 yards for this thing.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it's so quiet. It is so quiet.
It's amazing what they're doing now, and what guys like you are doing and teams of that like that are doing with the technology and the equipment. How far it's come from thinking about when you started, even in the early 2000s.
Man, it's unreal. It's unreal.
How big of a jump there's been is just, unreal.
Yeah. And so in 2000, I was trying to remember. Good grief. I nearly cut my arm, my right arm off. And I had an accident at work, got into a saw. Mm-hmm. And this was before I went to Primos, and had several surgeries, and like I, you know, if I didn't tell you, you probably wouldn't notice it, you know. But mm-hmm. I cut my arm about halfway between my elbow and my wrist, mm-hmm. maybe a little closer to my wrist, but I don't have any feeling in my hand, and so I had a couple years worth of surgeries, and. So I was supposed to go to Colorado elk hunting that fall that I cut my arm.
Of course.
And I was trying to figure out how to make it work, right?
Right, right.
And so I went and bought a crossbow at Dick's Sporting Goods. And mm-hmm. that's back when you had to cock them with the rope.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that you put around your neck.
Yeah, basically, and, right.
Yeah, and I couldn't do that. Man, and I was so mad. God, mm-hmm. I was so mad. And... somebody told me about the draw lock. So I wound up putting a draw lock on my bow. But shooting that crossbow back then, I was like, man, there's no way. You know, this thing, it sounds like a log truck, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It's so heavy and so cumbersome. And it's, you know, it's hell to cock it. And then, you know, I don't care how fast it is, a deer's going to know it's been shot.
Right. Yeah. Right.
He's deaf.
Yeah, yeah. That right. Or he thinks there's a tree falling, one or the other.
Yeah, something's gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But I remember those days.
I took that axe this year and shot a deer, shot a pretty good buck
mm-hmm.
at 60 yards, got a full pass through on him, and he never knew I'd shot him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was through him before he ever knew what happened.
Yeah, it's...
And, you know, got it on video, and it was just, I was like, this is insane.
Yeah, that's amazing how far the technology's come. I mean, you talk about not being able to do that, you know, with one hand or whatever. They got bows now, you can shoot with no hands. I'm pretty sure there's a guy that comes around the shop here that shoots a crossbow with no hands.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, I mean, it's the technology is just leaps and bounds, but. You know, that was, you know, so those guys, you know, John Severson, he was there then, and Ryan Chalupski and Matt Haas, you know, they just, they're sharp guys, and, you mm-hmm. know, the things they were doing with broadheads and stuff, it's the reason that they were, you know, leading the industry.
Right.
You know, it was a... So I learned a lot there, and I've always kind of prided myself in quality, you know, because mm-hmm. being in the industry, you know, your buddies, you know, is always, you've got buddies that, you know, want to know what's going on, and, you know, that, of course, they all want a discount.
Of course, yeah, yep.
You know, so you want to have, you know, you want to feel good about the stuff you're doing and everything, and
yep.
And I thought... You know, I thought, hey, I've done, you know, this project right here, this is pretty good. It's solid. Man, I didn't have a clue what quality was.
Right.
Till I got to Woodhaven and see what they, you know, see what they do on a daily basis is, mm-hmm. man, it's borderline losing money.
Yeah. Just because the effort they're putting into the quality of the stuff they're making.
Yes. Yeah. You know, if find a Woodhaven call that doesn't sound good out of the package.
Right. Right.
You know, now I'm not saying you can't take it out of the package and drag it behind the truck for, you know, a half a mile and throw it in the creek and it's going to sound bad. But
right.
You take one out of the package and tell me that it looks or sounds bad.
Mm-hmm.
It just don't happen.
Mm-hmm. I guess in today's, well, where the industry is today, that's kind of what you have to do to set yourself apart, I guess. I mean, some people probably do it with price point, but I think quality, especially knowing guys that hunt and are serious about it, they want quality stuff. I think that would be a big thing to set you apart, is putting that effort into the quality.
Right. So like this year at the NWTF in Nashville, you know, I always make it a point to spend, you know, some time walking around just looking, and mm-hmm. I go by pretty much every booth in there, and you know, there was one booth that had mouth calls for $2 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
and they were selling like crazy
because they were $2.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, those guys over there, you know, with $100 bills, you know, getting, you know, buying them up, you know, and I don't think they realized what they were buying.
Right.
You know, wrinkles in it, you know, mm-hmm. they could cover my bed.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Tape, and, you know, just cheap tape, you know, like duct tape yeah. and stuff. And, you know, we just... It's really something to see, to go down there, you know, to Woodhaven's in Heflin, Alabama. Of course, I work from home a lot. And mm-hmm. I've got everything up here at the house. I live in North Alabama, but I go down there a good bit. But just to go down there and spend a little time and tour the place and watch them, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I look at some of it and I think, man, we've got a guy, Terry Sullivan, that tunes our box calls, and he's been doing it forever. He and Mike Pentecost, you know, Mike owns Woodhaven, and mm-hmm. they've been friends and hunting buddies for forever, just about since Mike opened the door. Well, when Terry retired from the coal mines, he started working for Woodhaven tuning box calls.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a really good ear, musical ear. Like he's got daughters, and they're, of course, they're all grown and married, but they're all just gifted singers and mm-hmm. musicians, and you know, and he can play the devil out of a guitar, so yeah. he's got a really good ear. And man, he'll pick a box up and start working on it. And he may spend off and on, like that box may sit at his table for 2 weeks. You know, like he'll work on it, just, and then yeah. you know he'll say, well, I'm gonna go on to something else, and he'll set it to the side,
right?
And then tomorrow he might pick it up again, you know, mm-hmm. and he may do that a dozen times over 2 weeks or 6 months, you know,
right. just to get it right.
But the point is, it won't go any farther down the line till it gets the sound that he wants.
Right.
And it's that Woodhaven yelp on a box call,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's distinct and it works. And, you know, then we've got people in there. We got Jimmy runs our wood shop, and then Scott Tears, he runs the shop, you know, the whole shop. And
mm-hmm.
we got a guy, Kyle Yancey. He's kind of the, I guess you call him operations manager of it all.
And, right.
But you know, they're all involved. They're all, you know, if there's a question, you know, with a call, you know, they're all looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some ladies there that package calls, and they'll put them under a light before they put them in the package, you know, and just mm-hmm. make sure there's no scratches or runs. And,
right.
You know,
there's things you can't get from the corporate world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's other things that yeah. we're doing that, yeah. you know, I can't talk about as far as.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but it's just another measure of quality that
mm-hmm.
I've never seen before. And it's the reason that Woodhaven, you know, and it's personal down there to everybody, you know,
yeah.
and that's worth a lot. You know, when everybody's, you know, everybody's trying to put the best call in the package that they can, that's a good thing.
Yeah, no doubt. And that quality is how you keep people coming back too. You talked about those guys with the $2 calls. They may have made a handful of money that day, but they probably didn't sell too many to return customers after that.
Yes, and you know, that's one of the issues that we've got in the hunting industry is, you know, you've really, at the end of the day, you've got two types of businesses. You've got quality, and then you've got marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to, you know, they're going to spend all their development dollars and everything on marketing.
Yep.
They don't care what it sounds like.
Right.
They don't care, you know, if it functions, if it, you know, what it does.
How long it lasts, right.
Yeah, you know, or if it'll take a picture, they're just going to market it
mm-hmm.
to death and make you think it's the greatest thing.
Pay someone on TV to tell you it is.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know, and then they're going to move on to something else, because once they've got your money, they're not going to give it back.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, and so, and that, to me, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they didn't, you know, none of the places I've worked have really done that. Now, you know, that of course, once corporations start getting involved and these bigger parent companies start getting involved, you know, there's aspects of margins and stuff that you gotta get in, and there's, you know,
yeah,
there's projects that we weren't able to do because they didn't feel like there was enough of a margin in it when it would, you know, the rest of us felt like it would have been a great project, you know, that it would have helped hunters, you know, but there just wasn't enough money in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't do it, you know, and that's, you know, stuff like that. I'm not really, you know, I'm not really about that before that, you know, so.
Yeah. Once you do the corporate thing too, you lose a lot of say over what you do and what you can't do. And
yes,
you know, those projects you're talking about, maybe they're not going to be the most profitable for that specific project, but maybe that's what brings dollars in down the road to your other products or your products that are making you, that you do have better margins on.
You're preaching to the choir.
Sounds like we're
preaching to the choir, man.
Sounds like we're a lot alike. And we actually, you know, the companies we work with or the guys that we work with, that's kind of in my mind too, is I don't want to be somebody that just pushes something to people because they're, you know, giving us money for it. I want to actually try it and make sure I like it and use it. And then if we do, okay, now what can we do to have, you know, partner with those people? But if it's something that we're not going to use or don't necessarily like or don't think it's worth somebody's hard-earned money, we're not going to push it, you know.
Right. So, and I don't know if this is okay. If it's not, you can cut it out or tell me, but I was going to.
It'll be okay.
I promise.
Okay. We don't cut shit around here, man. It'll be okay.
Perfect. Perfect. So one of the guys I worked with at Primos, a guy named Scott Lee, mm-hmm. You know, he left Primos and he started Hawk Tree Stands.
Mm-hmm.
And they grew that up. Of course, GSM bought them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am a fan of GSM now. I do, you know, those guys, I got a lot of friends over there, and they do a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Scott has just started this week on social media teasing it. He's starting a new company in the saddle hunting world, and I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. I've seen some of the stuff that he's going to have out, you know, year one. And it's called, again, you know, it's Hunt Arsenal. And if you guys remember anything about Hawk, you know, they were all about accessories and they had all these neat gadgets for stand hunting and stuff.
Yep.
And I can guarantee you some of that's going to carry over into the saddle hunting stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be really innovative. And I'm excited to see what he, you know, where he goes with it and what he comes out with, and, you mm-hmm. know, some of the stuff to grow the saddle hunting world. Because despite what Alex said about me being old and stuff, I love to saddle hunt.
Yeah. That's a big thing now. I mean, it's becoming really popular.
So, you know, you tell me, do you guys saddle hunt?
I have not yet. I've never done it.
Okay. Well, don't start. It's like turkey hunting, man. Don't start.
You can't stop once you start.
Yeah. I like it because, you know, a lot of what you see is everybody advertising, talking about pushing it because it's lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lightweight, easy, and all this. And it is, you know. I mean, you're going in really light.
Right.
But the thing for me is, and it's one of the things that we worked on when I was at Pradco with Summit, is blending in more, because, you know, in a lock-on or a climber or a ladder stand,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're looking at hard straight lines,
right?
And, you know, so you stick out, you know. I mean, we've all, you know, you've been sitting in a stand and a doe come around the corner and she yeah. see you, you know, first
yep.
thing.
Yeah.
Why is it? Is it the wind, or is it, you know, what is it, her eyesight? Is mm-hmm. it her nose or her eyes?
Right.
You know?
Something's just off. Something ain't right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something doesn't look natural up there.
Mm-hmm.
But in that saddle, you know, there's not really any hard lines, and, you know, your legs and stuff, you're coming off that tree at an angle, so you kind of look natural up there.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the thing that really drove me on it was, you know, I got more deer closer, you know, I had more deer around me that was, you know, they weren't as alert and, you know, on edge, it seemed like. They were a little mm-hmm. more comfortable.
Right.
You know, I guess it's fair to say they're a little more comfortable.
How high are you hunting? How high are you hunting in that saddle?
Whatever it takes.
Okay.
And anywhere. And to be fair about that, when I first got out of high school, I climbed trees for a living.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I trimmed trees. So, mm-hmm. You know, it.
So you're at home in that thing then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of a natural feel for me, you know. It was familiar, but you know, I still, you know, and that's a big thing to me is safety. Mm-hmm. So, you know, seeing the things that I did working with Summit, you know, some of the pictures and some of the injuries and deaths and stuff, man. You're an idiot if you get up in a tree without a safety some kind.
No doubt.
You're an idiot. And I know this is cold to say this, but if you go up that tree and you fall and it ends you, that's nature. You found what you were looking for.
That's exactly right. A little bit of that natural selection.
Yeah, there's no excuse for it. I mean, you don't tell me it's bulky or it's hot. That's complete BS.
They're so accessible now and so easy to use that I don't even know mine's on most of the time.
Right. And, you know, and I've got friends that'll steal, you know, that I don't want to mess with that thing, you know, and I'm like, okay, all right. Well, I tell you what, when my ass gets to that truck, if you ain't there in a reasonable amount of time, I'm going home. I'm not going to come find you.
Right.
Not going to wait on supper.
Yeah. I'm not going to come find you dead, you know, or bone sticking out. Mm-hmm. That's not fair to me.
Right.
And it's not fair to your family, yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. So
just cause you didn't want to mess with the harness.
Right. So I, you know, I'm careful. You know, I don't hang a stand without a lifeline. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when I go up in that saddle, you know, I'm going up, I'm safetied, you know, and I'm never going to be in a big enough hurry that I'm just throwing sticks and running up a tree.
Right.
I'm just not going to do that. But, right. You know, once you get up there and you get that thing, you get locked in and you sit back and you get comfortable, you're there.
Right.
You know, it's not going anywhere. And, you know, if it is a thing, you know, where there's some fear to it, you know, they sell extra safety ropes every day. Take you an extra safety rope and put around the tree. Mm-hmm. You know, and hook off on that too, you know, now you're tied in twice. You can, you know, you can still move. You're not going to move as freely as you are with just the tether, but mm-hmm. You know, you can still move.
Well, I can tell you this. At some point I'm going to try one because I've yet to hear anybody who's used one say a bad thing about it.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I've talked to, we've had several guys on the podcast that use them, mm-hmm. and none of them, I mean, all of them are echoing the same kind of things you're talking about with the different kind of look up in the tree to the deer and the use of it, the easy use and the comfortableness of it. And it's, at some point I'm going to have to try one, right? You know?
Yeah. And you'll be surprised at how much easier you can move around the tree, mm-hmm. you know, or I should say how much easier you can get a shot off.
Right. Yep.
You know, I practice a little bit because, you know, you can get yourself into some awkward angles and spots, right. You know, naturally.
Yep.
You know, anytime you're wearing a safety, you're tied to a tree in any way, that can happen, but mm-hmm. you know, you can get all the way around that tree and get a shot off, you know, so, you know, that aspect of you can't always do that in a lock on or right. a climber, you know, or a ladder. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can think of one specific time last year that I would have been probably better. I would definitely would have had a better angle looking at the tree than being in my hang-on, because I had to turn all the way around and face the tree. And then, of course, I got my shoulder strap going over my shoulder, and I'm leaning down just real awkward. That would have been easier in a saddle, no doubt, and would have been so easier to shot.
You like lock-ons. I mean, and I do, too. That's primarily what I hunted out of.
That's what I use. I think I've got a ladder stand, but most of the time, or most of the other ones, if not all the other ones, I've got one blind, one ladder stand. The rest of them are hang-ons, because I think they are about as low profile as you can get with a stand, and they are fairly easy to move around, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I was going to ask you guys, what is the wildest setup on a lock-on you've ever seen or hunted out of? Let's just do that. Let's just say, what's the wildest setup on a lock-on that you've ever hunted out of?
Well, so mine.
Okay.
Mine. I had one in a ash tree, and most ash trees, at least around here, don't split.
Right.
But this thing was a 7-trunk ash tree up there where I was at, about 20 foot up. And in the wind, believe it or not, all 7 of them trunks wanted to go different directions. You know.
Yeah.
I never ever got seen out of that set. I loved that set. It was also real hard to shoot out of that set. Figure that one out, you know.
Yeah, trying to find a hole to shoot through.
Yeah, you got 6 other things in your way, you know, besides besides the one you're hanging on. But it is a great spot. I really did like it. Missed a good buck out of there. Believe it or not, I didn't tell very many people about that one.
Too late now.
I don't blame you.
We won't tell anybody.
Yeah. He was wound pretty tight, and I shot right over his back. But he lived another year. Anyway, that was the craziest lock-on set I've ever had. Really did like it, though. Went to check it one late summer, early fall, and all them trunks apparently had got to going around in circles in a storm or something, and it had just smashed and mangled that stand up there, and I thought, I ain't even going to get up there and try to get out of there, so it's still there today.
Yeah, just let it go.
Yeah.
And we got stands like that. Well, I say we. Harold's got stands like that where they've been up there for 30, 35, mm-hmm. 40 years, you know, and the tree is just, you know, all you can see is basically one tube where the tree's grown.
Yep.
But what about you? What about y'all? I mean, I've got a story I'm going to tell that I guarantee you I'm on top.
All right. So I got one. It wasn't me in the stand, but I had hunted out of this stand with the guy. It was a double set because, like, for filming and whatever, you take your buddy and sit in the lock-on. So I had hunted in this stand maybe a year prior to this happening, but a couple of buddies of mine went after that, the guy I was hunting with, and he took another buddy of his. And they got up there in the stand. Well, the guy that owned the stands reached down. And mind you, the other guy had fell out of a tree stand before.
Oh, no.
Off a ladder, I should say, going up. But he reached down and grabbed the strap and the buckle from the stand that guy was sitting in, and he showed it to the guy. He took it off of his stand and showed it to him. And believe it or not, he didn't like that too much.
I don't blame him.
That thing had been there so long, it was just growed into the tree so much, the strap had ended up breaking. And he pulled that buckle off there and hung it out in front of him and showed it to him while he's sitting in the stand. Yeah. I'm glad it wasn't me, because one of us would have hit the ground, and maybe both of us.
Well, we'd have got on the ground and we'd have rolled on the ground.
Yeah.
I'd have killed you.
Yep.
Oh, that is something. Yep. Well, so I told you I was going to top y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even have to hear the third story.
I believe you. I can't top that one.
So... a good friend of mine, Sean Wright, he pro staffs for us, and he used to pro staff for Night and Hail, but he's in Woodhaven now. I go up to his place to hunt, and he's like, I told him, I said, well, you know, tell me what I need to bring. And he said, man, just bring your bow. And I said, well, you know, lock on, saddle, climbers, what can I bring? He said, man, I got stands right where you need them. I was like, okay. So I get up there that afternoon, and, you know, I'm on a hunt that afternoon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I take a quick shower and get ready, and he takes me down to in the river bottom there to take me to the stand. And He said, man, you'll like this stand. He said, it's in a little opening in a thicket. And he said, man, they're just trails going everywhere through, coming through that little opening. And he said, it's a lock on. He said, no, it's kind of up there. And I said, okay, well, that's fine. You know, I don't care. He said, it's probably, you know, you're probably going to be standing about 20, you know, 25 foot or so. And I was like, okay, well, that don't bother me, mm-hmm. you know? And so we're walking through the woods and we go across this ditch and come up and I see this, come through the trees, I see this wooden ladder. And I don't know about Illinois, but in Alabama, I haven't seen a wooden ladder since I was a kid.
Yeah, right.
Now, I'm not talking about a 2x4s. I'm talking about an actual wooden ladder.
Roof ladder, yeah.
You know, like you would buy, you know, back in the old days. You know, now they're fiberglass, right?
Yeah.
Or aluminum.
Yeah. Right.
Well, this is wooden ladder. And it's like, I said, dude, there's a wooden ladder out here. And he said, yeah, that's a stand. And I said, So we get up there, and of course, you know, there's no lifeline or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from the top of the ladder to the foot part of the lock on is about 10 feet.
Oh man.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, you know, and my eyesight's not the best in the world, but I'm looking and I said, is there screw in steps? And he said, yeah, there's two of them. I said, to cover 10 foot.
He
said, yeah.
He must be tall.
I said, no, he's my height. Like he's, you know, I'm 5'11" at best, you know? And so I was like, golly, and I'm thinking in my mind, he knows how I feel about screw-ins. I hate them,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause I've seen pictures, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not going to use a screw-in step to step on. But, you know, we're there and I thought, okay, whatever. You know, all right, so I go up this tree. I get up the top of the ladder and hook my safety. And the strap that's holding the ladder to the tree is not even hooked, you know. And then, you know, I'm like, well, that first step is about chest high. So, you know, I loosen my safety up, throw it up over the step above it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'll just walk up, you know, like we used to do climbing trees.
Right.
I finally make it into that stand, and he's standing down there, and he's like, see, man, it ain't bad. And I said, dude, your ass is fired.
It ain't good.
Yeah, I said, you're done. And he said, what? And I said, you will not hang another stand. So that evening, of course, and I saw deer, but just didn't see the one we were after.
Mm-hmm.
And that evening, when it got too dark to shoot, I got on the step, and I popped the straps on that lock-on and put it on the ground. And made my way down to that ladder. Well, I left them steps, them screw-in steps. Mm-hmm. I left them. But I brought the strap for the ladder down with me, and I laid the ladder on the ground. And he come up, and he's like, dude, you serious? And I said, you dang right. You done. So he tells me, and this is, I'm not kidding you, folks. He tells me, he says, hey, tomorrow I'm going to take you to this other spot. He said, there's, you know, that deer's back in there. And he said, he's patterned pretty good. He said, I'm going to take you to this other spot. He said, it's a brand new stand. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I said, but this is not happening anymore. I'll hang the stands. You just do the groundwork. I'll hang the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, because I don't bounce. I'm at an age now where if I hit the ground, I'm not bouncing. You know, right. I'm just gonna kind of just spread out, and that'll be
yeah.
And so the next day, I didn't hunt that next morning, but that afternoon we go over there, and dude, same deal. That we walk up this creek bed and go up this bluff and get on top of this bluff. And there's a wood ladder, and it's in a tree that forks at the base. You know, it's split at the base.
Right.
So the ladder is on one tree. Well, you get to the top of the ladder, and there's two sticks on the other side going up to the lock house.
Well, why would we put them on the same side now? That would make too much sense.
He's trying to spread the weight load out there.
Yeah. I guess so. But here's the really great part. The sticks were those the old API sticks that, you know, they kind of had a little angle on them that your foot wouldn't slide off.
Yeah, supposedly, right?
Yeah, well, he had them upside down.
So your foot would slide off.
Yeah, your foot's going to slide off.
And so you fired him twice, right?
Yeah, I fired him twice. But so I get up there and get into the lock-on. And, of course, there's about a 6-inch limb angling across the lock-on. So, you know, you've got your own little elbow rest there.
Wouldn't there be?
Yeah, and it's just high enough on, you know, the seat. There's just enough space that you can slide under it and have just enough sound that they can hear you if you move.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I told him, hey, that was your last chance. I'm going to trump this one. You're fired.
Yeah.
You're gone.
One wooden two ladder too many. Maybe two wooden ladders too many.
Yeah, two wooden ladders too many. Wow. So I give Sean a hard time about that. But,
that's awesome.
We have a lot of fun.
That's a great story.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you can top that out of a lock on, you're doing something.
I got nothing for that one.
No, I got nothing.
Ain't no way. I do have a couple questions for you, though, before we get you out of here.
Yes.
I forgot to ask earlier, do you remember what your first bow was? What brand it was?
It's a High Country.
You had a High Country. All right. That's, well.
Yeah, I had a shop.
Have you ever heard of a High Country?
Oh, yeah. I used to shoot one.
I had a bow shop. Okay. I actually had two bow shops back in the late 80s and all the way through almost 2000, and we sold High Countries up here.
Yeah, it was about a 65-inch High Country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it weighed about 45 pounds.
Sounded like a cannon.
Yep. Shot arrows that were about 2-inch diameter.
Oh, yeah. Yep. About 3 pounds a piece.
Yes.
And like I 22-16s or something like that.
Yes. Yep. And I couldn't tell you how many times I emptied that quickie quiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And never touched a deer.
And you're going way back now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was, trust me.
Yeah.
Hunting out of a daggum old man, a steel old man, one of the very first ones.
Do you remember what the name of the High Country was that you shot?
I don't. It was solid black.
Was it a recurve limb or was it straight limb?
It's straight limb.
Straight limb. So it was before the split limbs.
Yeah. No, it was not.
They made some recurve limb bows. Man, you talk about heavy. They were like 70 some inches long, and they literally weighed pounds. Had a couple guys, old school guys, that really liked them. But my God, you couldn't hold them up for very long at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I look at it now and I think, how the hell did we ever kill a deer with that?
Right.
You know, how in the world, shooting about 35 foot.
On a good day with no wind.
Back then, 200 was achievable sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And thank God it was downhill.
Right. No doubt.
Otherwise, the arrow would have never made it.
Yeah,
The first adult bow I had was a hand-me-down split limb High Country that I used with some Wasp broadheads and the same 22-15 or 16.
Yeah, like 22-15 aluminum arrows and 130 grain Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit it, you're
you
no doubt
you could pass through an oak tree with the thing.
Yeah.
You had the kinetic energy.
Yeah. But. Yeah.
And, you know, but the great thing about it back then was, if you missed, it wasn't hard to find your arrow.
No. Right.
I mean, like, you know, 10, 15 yards, you know, you're going to see that arrow, you know.
You may have to unscrew the arrow while the broadhead struck in the tree, but you got an arrow back.
Yes. Absolutely.
No doubt.
Many times.
No doubt. The other question I had for you, the last one, what's a favorite hunt you've been on, whether it be like an elk hunt or something, or maybe it's a whitetail hunt where you killed one, or maybe you didn't even kill anything. What's your just a favorite hunt, or maybe you got a couple that come to mind?
I do. And so when I was listening to you and Lundy talk, you and Sean talk, and that kind of got me to thinking back, because I agree with a lot of what he said.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, I'm a big guy. Let's just hunt, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to each his own. You know, if you get to hunt every day of the season and you kill a 200-inch deer, I'm going to be tickled to death for you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're working 12-hour shifts 6 days a week and you get to hunt twice in a season and you kill a spike, I'm going to be tickled to death for you.
Yep.
You know, if you've got a half an acre or no land or 1,000 acres, you know,
mm-hmm.
you make it what you want to make it, right? You know, I mean, it's your hunt. You know, you do it your way, and don't apologize for it. You don't owe nobody nothing.
Yep.
You know, if you want to shoot that young buck and it's legal, you know, if you're doing it by the law, man, do it. Mm-hmm. And do not apologize 100%. For it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember when, you know, like when I was a kid and, you know, my dad or one of their friends would shoot a spike. And they'd have that thing strapped across the hood, not the bed of the truck, strapped across the hood.
Yeah, yep.
So
yep.
everybody could see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, tickled to death.
Yep.
And we take that for granted, you know, and
no doubt.
And it's okay. It's human nature. You know, I mean, you know, like you guys are blessed with deer.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So it's nothing for you to see deer, you know, but back then, you know, it was rare to see deer down here.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't really have any deer till they took them from you and brought them down.
Right. You're welcome.
But, you know, yeah, thank you. But, you know, back to the point is, you know, just hunt, you know, figure out what works for you. If it's the most expensive bow or gun that they make and that works for you and you got confidence in it, do it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the cheapest thing. If it's something that you've pieced together, you know, whatever it is, you know, figure out what works for you mm-hmm. and just hunt. And you know, let's be happy for you. You know, let's don't kick you because you ain't got top shelf gear, you know,
mm-hmm.
or didn't kill, you know, 100-whatever-inch deer, you know, 150, 60, 70-inch deer, you know.
Yep.
So to answer that question and the – I'm sitting here looking at them. The probably, and the deer that I've killed, every one of them has a story.
Oh yeah,
you know, absolutely. And I remember the story more than I remember the size of the deer.
Yep.
But they every one of them there's a story with it. But I've got one that we call it. Me and my cousin call it the 120 pounds of rutting buck. And so we were hunting some management area lands, public land here in Waterloo, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my two cousins, their brothers, were going to go on this gun hunt. And it was December, and it had, you know, it had snowed here a good bit. You know, I mean, it only takes a dusting here to shut the whole state down.
Oh, absolutely. People lose their mind, forget how to live.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's no milk and bread and cars
for
are in
miles.
The ditch.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's, you know, cars in the ditches everywhere mm-hmm. and, you know, for dusting. But this was a legitimate snow. It was snow and ice. And it was also a full moon. So, you know, at 4:30 in the morning, it's like daylight, right?
Yep.
And so the older cousin Chuck, he's got an old Bronco, and that's what we drove, just because the roads were ice.
Right.
And we make it down there and get our permit, and we go to the backside of one of the parts of it that we like to hunt, and get out there. I got dropped off first, and then my cousin Randy, and then, of course, and to be honest, I don't know if Chuck ever got out of the truck. I think he just went to the end of the road and slept.
He was the smartest one of the bunch, is what you're saying?
Yeah, probably was. No, but so, I've got my climber, got my gun, and I walk out this little short ridge that's sitting on the side of a big bluff. And it's probably one of the biggest hardwood bottoms on that management area. Mm-hmm. And I had run out of doe urine, and I couldn't find any anywhere mm-hmm. around here, not anything any good.
Right.
And I had in Walmart and saw this Jackie's deer lure, rut and buck.
Uh huh.
And I thought, well, you know, hell, it's worth a try. You know,
right, yeah, right.
So I got this rut and buck, and I had just a little doe urine estrus left. Mm-hmm. And I like to take Q-tips and cut them in half, mm-hmm. and I'll just dip them and drop them as I go. So I did that with my doe urine mm-hmm. as I'm walking out there to where I'm gonna, you know, climb the tree. Well, I'd get the rut and buck out, and I put some of it on a cotton ball, and I just throw it mm-hmm. about 10 yards, and there's this old dead log there, and throw it over it, and I'm starting to break my stand apart to put it on the tree, and I hear this buck grunting down in the holler, and it's getting louder, and I was like, that dude's coming this way. So I stop and grab my binoculars, and I'm glassing, you know, this bottom looking for him. And I pick him up, and this dude he's trotting at a pretty good pace. Mm-hmm. And he's coming straight at me. And, it dawned on me at that point that the wind was, that's the way the wind was blowing right at that moment. Yeah. And I was like, okay, he smells that estrus, you know?
Yep.
So he comes up the bluff within about 15 or so yards of me mm-hmm. and stops and starts stomping, you know, and blowing, because I'm sticking out there like a sore thumb, you know?
Right.
The gun's laying up against the tree, stand, you know, is broke apart and, you know, laying against the tree, backpack on the ground and everything, you know, and I'm just sitting there. Mm-hmm. So he turns and starts walking along the side of the bluff, and he grunted again. And I was like, what is he? What? I'm trying to figure out, what is he doing? Why is he grunting? And why is he grunting like that? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I grunted at him. Well, he didn't stop. He went right on out of sight. And I was like, okay. So I go back to my stand. Mm-hmm. Well, I hear a limb pop, and I hear him grunt. He's on the other side of the ridge for me. He's right on the other side of the dead log where I threw that cotton ball.
Yep.
I happened to notice that the wind has also shifted. You know, wind in there down here swirls a lot. It's, mm-hmm. But in these pines and these hills and hollers and stuff, it swirls. But the wind was blowing from me to him, and man, he kind of crested that little rise, and he had his ears pinned back mm-hmm. and he's all bristled out and just, you know, breathing smoke, you know.
Right.
And that was the coolest thing. I would give $1 million for the footage of that deer coming yeah. up, and he's just every step just jabbing the ground.
Oh yeah.
You know. And then it dawns on me, I'm like, shit, he thinks I'm that buck.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Jackie's rut and buck or whatever it is.
Yes, yes, Jackie's rut and buck. Jackie's deer lure, rut and buck.
And you're like, Jackie.
Yeah, I'm Jackie. Yeah, and I didn't want to be Jackie. So I thought, you know, all right, if you step over that log, it's not going to end well for one of us. Yeah. And I reached, and I wasn't fast, but I wasn't slow either. I got my hands on that gun mm-hmm. and I clicked I opened the scope, popped the covers on the scope up and clicked the safety off. And this dude's still coming. And I was like, all right, you know, I don't know if it's legal shooting a lot, but it's practically daylight.
It was though. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And he stepped over that log and I just buried it right in his chest. And he runs right up the trail, and he falls over and kicks out literally about 5 yards from the road.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Man,
you can't beat that.
Yeah, and my cousin texts me. He's like, "Did you just shoot?" And I said, "I did." And he said, "Coyote?" I said, "Nope." "Bobcat?" "Nope." He said, "What'd you shoot?" I said, "7 point." Yeah. He said, "That was quick." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, just sit tight. It's cold. Don't worry. He's not going to ruin. It's cold." Mm-hmm. I said, "I'm fine." So I get my climber about head high off the ground and just go to sleep. Yeah, and yeah. I lean back and just snooze because we were coming out at 12.
Yep.
And, it's, of course, they come up in the truck and the Bronco. And he's like, "Where's he at?" "Right there." "Yeah. Well, you already drug him." "No."
"Nope."
"That's where he fell dead."
That's just how good you are.
He's like, "Man, that's a little deer. What'd you shoot him for?" I was like, "Man, listen, you'd have shot him too." So we walked down there and I showed him, where he come up over the hill and stuff and where I shot. And, I told him the story. And it's like, "Man, I'd have hammered him too."
Yep.
He's just a little old, he probably ain't 13 inches between, inside.
Right. Yep.
Broke up. He'd been fighting with something.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't impress a soul. But that was one of the coolest things to see that deer. And, and he wasn't 5 yards when I shot him. Maybe at the most 5-6 yards.
Wow.
That's self defense.
Yeah.
And it really, really and truly it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me say this. I wasn't going to find out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He made that decision for you when he stepped across the log.
He made that real easy when he got in my personal bubble.
Yep. No doubt.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great story, too.
Yep. That's what it's about. I will say, though, one of the biggest things I'm taking away from this story is that the product design engineer is using Q-tips and cotton balls for his for his deer scent.
Well,
he's quick, Rip. I'm telling you, he's quick.
Yeah. I like to, every once in a while give away a secret. Something that brings, I want to feel like I've brought some value.
That's it podcast. Right there.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. We're taking notes.
Yeah. For everybody listening, I'm going to cut that out and make some audio of it. If anybody else ever needs any advice, that's what I'll give them.
Yeah, and you have to buy the ones with that are made out of the paper. Don't buy the plastic ones because if you don't cut them at home with scissors and you try to do it with a knife, it gets a little aggravating. So just buy the paper ones.
Okay. Yeah, we don't need any accidents out there.
Yeah, you literally can break them in half by hand.
There you go. There you go. That's the big trade secret for the day. All right, Rip. Well,
it does take a lot to impress you.
No. Before you do get out of here, let everybody know if you're on social media or anything or where they can find you. If you want to, go ahead and whatever you got.
Yeah, I do. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, and it's just Rip Dickerson. And I don't do just a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. I post on there some. And, I like to get on there every once in a while and complain about some things.
Oh, but, yeah. Well, guys got to do that occasionally just to stay sane.
Yeah. That's right. But yep. I appreciate you having me on, man. I enjoy listening to y'all. You guys do a great job with
I appreciate that a lot.
Podcast and everything. And I hope. Go ahead.
I was just going to say thanks for taking the time out of your evening and being on with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, I enjoyed it, man. Anytime.
Yep. Well, like I tell everybody, we're definitely not worried about having return guests on, so I'll hit you up sometime and we'll talk maybe even in the springtime about some turkey hunting at some point too, because we need to do more of that. We need to talk more turkeys on here. We ain't done enough of that.
Yeah, we said we were going to talk about turkeys and we didn't get to it. But that's a good idea.
Yep, that leaves something for next time.
Yeah. Now listen, but I'm going to tell you right up front though, I don't know if I can share the secrets on the turkeys.
Well. We won't make you do any of that. We'll just talk about shooting them.
We already know that we're all using the right calls up here. We're a fan of Woodhaven calls. Mm-hmm. So we're already on the right track.
Yep.
Well, I want you to know we appreciate your business and we appreciate you using our stuff. And I do mean that. And I do, you know, it's a customer driven place, man, mm-hmm. you know, and we appreciate each and every person out there that's willing to spend their hard earned money on our products.
Yep.
So thank you from the bottom of my heart and everybody at Woodhaven. You know, I want to say thank you.
Yep, for sure. Well, hey, we'll get you out of here again. We'll have you on sometime. I'll be in touch with you. Stay in touch and let me know how things are going and all that. And if you ever find yourself up in Illinois and you want to go have, you know, Rick, if you want to do a podcast or you want to go have a beer or something, just let me know.
Absolutely, man. I'll take you up on that.
Hey, I'm here. You got my number.
Good talking to you, Rip.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys.
All right. See you, Rip.
See you.